What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 131, and today we're going to be talking about the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. And specifically, I want to dive into an article titled "The Omega-6 to Omega-3 Ratio Doesn't Matter" by Michael Joseph. So you can find that guy. I follow him on Twitter, and he's a pretty knowledgeable guy. But he's fairly moderate. You know, I would say me and Tom are definitely more in the low-carb world. And Michael Joseph is definitely more a fan of kind of whole foods. Almost like a Chris Kresser type of guy. But those guys, they have their arguments too. You know, and there's not that they're right and we're wrong or vice versa. You know, we just come from things from a different angle. But this article, I've talked about it with Tom a few times. But I've read it maybe, five or six times now. And over the course of months, because the first time I read it, it just didn't jive with me. There's a few things that I thought I knew that this article kind of fought against. And I finally took the time to go through all the references to really, really figure it out, because I just felt like it deserved it. This is something me and Tom have talked about a lot, omega-6 and omega-3 ratios. And if you don't know what that is, don't worry, we'll explain it in a minute. But I feel like, I haven't told you this yet, Tom, but initially when we were talking about omega-6, omega-3 ratios, we talked kind of in a broad sense. And in my mind, I would kind of relate that to like an entry level, like maybe college course, say like omegas 100. But this, what we're going through right now, is like omegas 200. It's kind of like the upper division omega-6 to omega-3 ratio discussion. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, definitely, because normally when we talk about, or like the entry-level argument is, you just want the ratio to be 1-to-1, and then you kind of leave it at there. Like, that's where the conclusion is. Mm-hmm. But this one, we're going to kind of talk about, well, that's kind of true, but like, let's kind of go into a little bit more detail, because does that mean if you have a shit ton of omega-6s and a shit ton of omega-3s, is that still good? Or if you have 0 and 0? That's like a 1-to-1 ratio. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Or is there like a Goldilocks zone that both of them need to be in?
Yeah, so that's exactly. So it's not like the information we like were saying before wasn't actually correct. A lot of people see benefits when just trying to get their diet as close to 1-to-1 as possible. But this is just a little more detail. And if you are someone who's really trying to optimize their diet and you really care about just performance and health and how you look in the mirror, then this is one way you can definitely improve all of those things. Just to start off, what is the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio? So it's a ratio of certain fats within our diet. Fats, or our diet, contains three separate types of fat. So we have saturated fat, something like stearic acid you find in a steak. You have monounsaturated fat, something like oleic acid found in olive oil. And then you have polyunsaturated fats, which are going to be EPA and ALA, mainly found from like seeds, or EPA and DHA found in fish, and arachidonic acid found in pork and found in a bunch of different things, really. But we're specifically talking about the polyunsaturated fats, which are omega-3 and omega-6s. And these fats are essential because they have to come from our diet. Our body can't make them ourselves. Our body can make saturated fat. Our body can make monounsaturated fats, but it can't make polyunsaturated fats. And like Tom said earlier, our ancestral diet, so what humans really have been exposed to for the vast majority of our evolution, was a diet pretty close to 1-to-1. So we got just as much omega-3s as we did omega-6s. The problem with today's diet, the current ratio on the higher end for most people is 20-to-1. So that's 20 omega-6s to 1 omega-3s, which is not good. That's completely out of whack. And it's going to come with some consequences, obviously. And the main source of dietary omega-6 fats in the modern world is seed oils. Something we've talked about a million times and we hate them. We call it industrial seed oils. They're just complete trash. And there's been a massive increase in seed oil consumptions in the last 100 years. So specifically, here's an example from soybean oil. And this comes directly from that guy's article. So in 1909, soybean oil provided 0.006% of calories in the average American diet. So that's basically none. We pretty much did not eat soybean oil. By 1999, soybean oil contributed more than 7% of total calories. This represents a 1,000-fold increase in consumption. So that's just, I mean, like I said earlier, that's going to come with consequences, don't you think? Like, that's not a very far logical leap.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that 1,000-fold increase, because when you just hear 7%, it's like, that sounds still like a very, very small number. But when you hear that, oh, shit, that's 1,000 times more than what we used to eat, like, yeah, that's a crazy number. Like, no wonder why there's so many, like, negative health effects attributed to omega-6s. Is because, yeah, we're eating 1,000 times more of them than what we should be.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. Like, it's not that omega-6s are inherently evil. They're not. They're 100% essential. They're 100% natural. But it's just the consumption rate that we eat them is just crazy. It's just never, it's never been seen in human history. In the past 100 years, the amount of omegas we're getting in our diet, it's crazy, or omega-6s. And like we said, that's from seed oil. So it's not just soybean oil. It's also canola oil. It's corn oil. It's cottonseed oil. Any other big ones you can think of?
Corn oil. I mean, sesame oil, peanut oil, like pretty much any seed or vegetable oil out there.
Yeah, so those are all the ones. And you see them all in the supermarket. Everyone uses them to cook. They're just ubiquitous, and they're poisonous, honestly.
And they're dirt cheap.
Yeah, exactly. So normally, like we said, we promoted just try and get your diet total omega-6s and total omega-3s close to a 1-to-1 ratio, and then you probably shouldn't have to worry about the rest. And I still partly agree with that argument. I think the vast majority of people will see improvement with that. But this article promotes something called the omega-3 index, and it claims that this is a better marker for health over focusing just on omega-6 to omega-3 ratio in our diet. So you can increase your omega-3 index by eating more EPA and DHA, which are those preformed omega-3 fats found primarily in fatty fish. So when you hear like salmon's a good source of omega-3s, they're talking about EPA and DHA. So the omega-3 index is a measurement that establishes three things. So it establishes the amount of omega-3s in the blood, the proper proportion of EPA and DHA in the blood compared to all other fatty acids, and then the ratio of EPA to ARA, which stands for arachidonic acid, and that's an omega-6 fatty acid. And an omega-3 index over 8% was associated with the greatest cardioprotection, whereas an index under 4% was associated with the least. And thinking about cardioprotection, that's huge because heart disease is the number one killer out there. I think most people know that, don't you think?
Yeah, they should. I mean, especially if you've been listening to that podcast, our podcast, because it's pretty much like our main topic. Our main topics are heart disease and cancer, the number one and number two killers.
Yep, exactly. So why should you care about your EPA to ARA ratio? It's, you should care because higher EPA intake, and remember, that's just preformed omega-3 fats. You find them in fish usually. So higher EPA intake and higher EPA blood levels improve numerous markers for cardiovascular risk. A higher EPA to ARA ratio, meaning more omega-3 fats in the blood, appears to lower the risk of cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular events. A recent review of randomized controlled trials demonstrated that higher intake of EPA and DHA improved several risk markers for cardiovascular disease. These improvements included lower triglycerides, larger LDL particle size, and higher HDL levels. These are all good things. So wouldn't you agree that these are markers that people should really care about when they have blood panels?
Yeah, I mean, especially if it's increasing that HDL to triglyceride ratio, that's one of the best markers for heart disease. So if it's going to be improving that, then you know it's actually doing a lot of good for improving heart disease risk.
Yep, exactly. That's something I actually really like with these papers and these references, because if these papers said like, oh, it lowered LDL, therefore it increased like cardioprotection, I would automatically be like, okay, this is BS. But all the markers they outline as far as getting better, I agree with. You want lower triglycerides, you want larger LDL particle size, and you want higher HDL. Those are all really good things. So focusing on your EPA to ARA ratio has its benefits. So what's wrong with just focusing on total omega-3 and omega-6 in the diet? Because that's something I would recommend or had recommended in the past. So this idea that the omega-6 to 3 ratio is mainly based on the idea that good anti-inflammatory omega-3 fats and bad pro-inflammatory omega-6 fats are in constant competition, and too much omega-6 leads to constant high levels of inflammation. So really, this dumbs down this complex argument too far, making it untrue. And this is something me and Tom have talked about a lot in the past, that the human body is complex. A lot of these arguments, there's a ton of nuance to them, but explaining this to the mass audience is just, it's hard because you do have to dumb things down. Not everyone, actually very few people have a science background, and even less people actually care about this shit. So you have to dumb it down. And the thing is, when you break it down to these really, really simple levels, you lose the truth.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you try and make something really simple, you're going to be wrong. You're always going to oversimplify, but you have to, because not everybody's going to be an expert in everything. And if you want people to remember it, then you just have to make it simple. Simple is easier.
Yeah. And so this is really going to go into more of the complex side of it and why this is probably the best way to think about omega-6s and omega-3s, even if, you know, it is a little bit over most people's heads. Because like I said earlier, I don't think telling people to lower total omega-6 and increase total omega-3 is bad advice. You know, it comes from a good place. And people will usually see health markers improve doing this, but there is better and more accurate way to calibrate the omega-3 and omega-6 in our diet. And so that is the omega-3 index, is what it's trying to do. The omega-3 index looks at the ratio of specific omega-3s and omega-6 fat. It doesn't just lump them all together. And just focusing on total omega-3s and omega-6 ratio forces you to lump in ALA with EPA and DHA, which you shouldn't, because ALA is not a good source of bioavailable omega-3 fats. Do you want to break that down real quick, the difference between those three, or really those two, ALA and EPA?
So ALA is, it's technically an omega-3 fat, but it's only found in the plant kingdom. It's not found in the animal kingdom. EPA and DHA is the omega-3 fat that our body actually uses. So while ALA is technically an omega-3 fat, we really shouldn't consider it to be one because our bodies can't use it. So we have to convert ALA, something that we would find in like walnuts or pecans, something like that, or flaxseed, chia seeds. A lot of these plant things that are that say that they're high omega-3 foods, they really aren't because they're high in ALA. And that conversion ratio is maybe 11% at best. I mean, that's best case scenario. You're getting 11% conversion from the ALA to EPA. So, yeah, it's really not like the best marker to be using, but technically it is an omega-3 fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so technically lumping them together isn't incorrect, but it's not telling you the whole story. So you'll see a lot of the times on a bottle of canola oil, it'll have like a heart healthy logo on it, and it'll say like a source of omega-3 fats, heart healthy and all this bullshit, but it's really just ALA. Our body, which is alpha-linolenic acid, our body doesn't absorb it. It barely converts it. It's just, it shouldn't be counted at all, in my opinion, but hey, it is what it is. And so, for example, just to lay this out real quick, people will recommend walnuts for their omega-3 content, like Tom just said. But the problem is, these omega-3s are in the form of ALA, which is plant-based omega-3 that our body doesn't absorb. And guess what the omega-6 to 3 ratio of walnut is? It's 5 to 1. So there's 5 times as much omega-6s as omega-3s in walnuts. So you will always be getting more omega-6s in nuts. And that form of omega-3 doesn't improve your omega-3 index. ALA consumption does not improve your omega-3 index. So the advice to eat more walnuts to help with your omega-6 to 3 ratio is just flawed on so many levels. But that's something you'll see a lot of people do, especially a lot of plant-based people. They'll say recommend walnuts, but that's just wrong. to lump linoleic acid, which is kind of the primary omega-6 fat, with arachidonic acid implies that they are both bad and pro-inflammatory, which they aren't. Arachidonic acid can be converted into anti-inflammatory precursors just like omega-3 fats can. Linoleic acid isn't inherently a bad thing. It's 100% essential. We have to get it in our diet. If we had a diet that was zero with linoleic acid, we would literally, I don't know if we would die, but I'm pretty sure we would die. We'd be very sick. It's an essential fat. We need it for a ton of things in our body. And when talking about how omega-3s and 6s affect inflammation, what we should focus on is the ratio specifically of EPA to ARA. The amount of EPA to ARA in the cells influences inflammatory processes rather than omega-6 to omega-3 in the diet. Higher inflammatory status can be seen in settings where EPA and DHA levels are low, but the problem is not the presence of omega-6 fats, but the absence of omega-3 fats. Higher amounts of linoleic acid in the diet do not increase the amount of arachidonic acid or affect the amount of omega-3s you can absorb from EPA and DHA. And that's a huge point. Like linoleic acid, with the omega-6 and 3 ratio argument, the kind of broad top level we used to talk about, linoleic acid doesn't compete with the preformed omega-3s. So you can eat all the linoleic acid you want, which is, this article would probably recommend. And if you add EPA and DHA, they don't compete with each other. So your body absorbs EPA and DHA just fine. And research has shown that tissue levels of arachidonic acid stop responding to increased dietary linoleic acid when the amount is above 2% of total energy. So how can you lower ARA, which would improve your omega-3 index? If high amounts of this is a problem and low amounts of omega-3 is a problem, so you increase the amount of EPA and DHA in the tissues, that lowers the levels of ARA in the tissues, thus improving your EPA to ARA ratio. So just by consuming more EPA and DHA, you can actually lower the amount of arachidonic acid in the tissues, which is a good thing. So absolute intake, and this is key, of preformed omega-3s plays a much more significant role than its ratio. And that's my point. It's the absolute amount of both omega-6s and omega-3s that matter. And this is an argument that I made not as eloquently a few weeks back when we talked about cardiolipin, we talked about vegetable oils. I kind of said briefly that the total amounts mattered, and that was from reading this article. But at that point when we did that initial podcast, I hadn't done the deep dive yet, so I wasn't able to fully articulate my thoughts, but now I understand better why. So for EPA and DHA, which again are the preformed omega-3 fats that you find in fatty fish usually, they have proven health benefits. More in the diet is better. Everyone is pretty low in EPA and DHA because no one eats a lot of salmon all the time. It just is what it is. And lowering linoleic acid isn't about lowering inflammation from, say, prostaglandins. It's about lowering the amount of linoleic acid incorporated into our tissues and lowering the amount of oxidized linoleic acid metabolites, which are very damaging to our body. And if you want to learn more about those metabolites, again, listen to that cardiolipin podcast. That's what I went through. But linoleic acid has some real, real toxic stuff that it gets turned into when it gets oxidized. And polyunsaturated fats, which these omega-6s are very, very unstable. And they're very prone to oxidation. So when they're very high in our diet and they take up 7, 10, 15% of total calories, you're swimming in oxidated linoleic acid metabolites. And that has consequences. So we talked about it in that podcast. Check that out if you want to learn more. And basically, with the standard American diet, everyone in today's world has maxed out their arachidonic acid content because linoleic acid above 2%. Like right now, what do you think the percentage of people eat lower than 2% linoleic acid in their diet?
I don't know, 1% of the population.
Yeah, maybe, right? And that's I think that's very true. You know, because it's just in every processed food, in every nut and every seed, there's so much linoleic acid that it throws off the ratio so quick. It's not that hard to be above 2% in the modern world. It's very, very easy. So lowering linoleic acid won't lower arachidonic acid unless you get it under that 2% marker, 2% total calories. And this would only happen on a carnivore diet, for example, or a well-formulated ketogenic diet or whole food diet. So you could eat carbohydrates. Like, you don't have to eat low carb to get your EPA index into a healthy range. Like, you know, white rice does not contain linoleic acid. Potatoes don't contain linoleic acid. Like, all these starchy foods that humans have been eating for a long time, that would not affect your EPA to ARA ratio. So it's possible to eat whole foods and have a healthy EPA ratio or EPA index, which is a good sign for health, like heart health. And, you know, obviously people eat rice and have heart health, like healthy hearts, you know, so it's not that crazy. But what's my recommendation, like, overall? Well, go ahead.
So before we move on to that, so just to kind of clarify, so one way to lower the amount of arachidonic acid in your body and linoleic acid in your body without even changing your diet at all, like from an omega-6 consumption standpoint, you can just eat more salmon. You can just eat more EPA and DHA, and your body will lower those levels by itself.
Yeah, it literally will replace the arachidonic acid in the cells, because EPA and DHA are that bioavailable, and it puts them where they're supposed to be. So it'll displace the arachidonic acid.
So one of the main problems that most Americans are seeing is not only are they consuming too much of these omega-6 fats, but they're not consuming enough omega-3s. So if people were eating salmon on a regular basis, lobster, something along those lines on a regular basis, without even cutting out the seed oils, they should see a large improvement in their health, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just kind of clarifying that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what the omega-3 index is. That's its point, you know, that just lowering both isn't the best. But if you can increase your amount of preformed omega-3s, you're going to see a lot of benefits. And the only thing I really didn't like about this paper, and just in general, because it paints linoleic acid in a pretty good light, and it had a whole section kind of defending increased linoleic acid in the diet, and I took the time to go through the references of that section, and the opposing argument goes something like this. It says increasing linoleic acid is good for heart health because linoleic acid has been shown to decrease LDL. And based on diet heart hypothesis, this decreases your odds of having a heart attack. And linoleic acid doesn't always increase inflammations. So I was like, okay, this is a complete BS. The paper that referenced increased linoleic acid content and decreased LDL was sponsored by the AHA. It had AHA right across the top. It was American Heart Association study, which they have an agenda. They have an agenda to damn LDL, and they'll do it any way, shape they can. And the reason why increased linoleic acid in the diet decreases LDL is because this linoleic acid gets incorporated into cellular membranes where it never was supposed to be. And these polyunsaturated fats, they're, I say crooked because they literally are. They're not straight like saturated fats. So they get incorporated in cellular membranes, and the body has to deposit more cholesterol from the blood into these cellular membranes to make them stable. So that's why increasing linoleic acid content decreases LDL in the blood, but that's not a good thing. LDL in heart disease is not a good marker at all. We've talked about it a million times. It's not something you should worry about. LDL has been damned wrongly for the last, I don't know, 70 years. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, 100%. I know we've even gone over studies. If you look at the bulk of the data, it seems like low LDL is a better marker for heart disease than actually high LDL. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the information's all over the place, but if you really want to take a close look at it, it seems like high LDL is actually better.
Yeah, so we have podcasts on that. Just search LDL on the website, and you'll find at least 4 or 5 podcasts referencing this. And literally, probably at this point, 20 to 30 reference papers outlining it. Like, we're not just making this up. There's studies are out there that prove this, and it's just without a shadow of doubt, in my opinion.
And it's still the number one killer, even though our focus has all been around lowering LDL.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's clearly not working.
It's clearly not working. Like, if statins were this magic drug that saved people's lives, I mean, they're just not. We have a whole series on the statin scams, so listen to that. And they did have a few papers showing that linoleic acid doesn't always increase inflammation. And I'll go into that a little bit, you know. The ones that show studies that show more linoleic acid increasing health markers, I think this has to do a lot with cardiolipin. And this is, none of this was obviously mentioned in these papers. Nobody's talking about cardiolipin unless you go to like specific sites or specific people who know about it. But this is a quote from one of the papers I referenced for the CardioLipin podcast a few weeks ago. And this will kind of help kind of make sense why added linoleic acid can be beneficial to some people. So, quote, "It's a standard observation that older mitochondria have fewer oxidized or missing cardiolipin. Adding cardiolipin or linoleic acid to mitochondria made dysfunctional by cardiolipin oxidation actually improves function as it's better than none," end quote. So basically, adding linoleic acid to our mitochondria will let the body make some cardiolipin, since cardiolipin can be made by bonding four linoleic acids together, and adequate cardiolipin is needed for healthy mitochondria. And that's a real brief overview. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that doesn't seem like the best way to go about it. It seems like you're going to be causing more harm than good with that strategy.
Yeah, in the long run, you will. Like, in my opinion, this isn't the best way to improve mitochondrial health. This is like putting a Band-Aid on a wound that really needs 100 stitches. Like, you're just not going to help. The best way to improve mitochondrial health would be to prevent the oxidation of cardiolipin in the first place. And you can do that by decreasing your total linoleic acid content in your diet and increasing the amount of saturated and monounsaturated fats in your diet. Think like steak and pork. Both of those are both excellent sources of saturated and monounsaturated fats. So if you want to learn more about that, listen, like I said, to the CardioLipin podcast. These podcasts, they line up fairly well. I would listen to that one first. And so simply ignoring total linoleic acid content in our diet, like this article implies, because it doesn't lower arachidonic acid and it won't improve your omega-3 index, is misguided. Like, I think your, what's that, you can't see the forest despite the trees, is that the saying?
Yeah, that's the saying.
I think that's exactly what it is. You're focusing so much on the omega-3 index that you're totally negating all the other harmful effects of the linoleic acid. And it may not affect total body inflammation. And I say may there on purpose because there are plenty of studies showing that it does. But that's not why you should lower linoleic acid content, in my opinion. So linoleic acid gets incorporated into tissues of our body in a dose-dependent manner. Meaning the more we eat, the more gets incorporated into our cells. That's a problem for numerous reasons. So linoleic acid incorporated into LDL leads to increased oxidized LDL, which increases plaque formation, not a good thing. Linoleic acid incorporated into cardiolipin leads to mitochondrial dysfunction, which is the root cause of basically every disease. So there are plenty of very important reasons to lower linoleic acid as much as possible.
So basically, it's better to have saturated fat for your mitochondria so they don't get dysfunctional in the first place, instead of trying to use linoleic acid to kind of help the mitochondria out, but it's also going to harm them at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. So adding linoleic acid only helps the mitochondria that are already in this like death loop, that already have dysfunctional cardiolipin, that already have oxidized cardiolipin, because it's like a last ditch effort. It's like an emergency fuel source, but the emergency fuel source is toxic. So you're not going to live much longer.
So you should just be consuming a lot of saturated fat so they don't get damaged in the first place.
Exactly. That's a recommendation for sure. And these studies showing no difference in total linoleic acid amount and arachidonic content never lowered linoleic acid to under 2% of total calories. And I understand why. None of these people would consider an ancestral diet to be healthy, but you would be under 2% if you ate a truly ancestral diet. And I pulled up some numbers here. So this is if you're going to eat a carnivore diet. It's just the most basic diet out there. And beef is about 2% total polyunsaturated fat. So you will never reach that 2% total calories from linoleic acid alone, no matter how much you eat. And here's an example of a typical like carnivore day. Most people will eat about 2 pounds of ribeye a day. That's about 2,500 calories, 180 grams of fat. That's 3.6 grams of polyunsaturated fat, and 100% grass-fed beef, which your ancestors would have ate, is about 1-to-1 ratio omega-3 to omega-6s. So that's 1.8 grams total of omega-6 fats in 2 pounds of steak. So that shows 1.8 grams compared to 2 pounds. It's just a tiny amount. Like, our body was never exposed to that much omega-6 fats.
Yeah, that sounds a lot closer to that under 1% from, like, 1909 than that 7% like it is in 1999.
Exactly, yeah. And just for reference, there's more than double the omega-6 fats in just 1 ounce of almonds. And 1 ounce of almonds is nothing. That's a few teaspoons of almond butter, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't sound like much at all. That sounds like you can easily eat that and not even notice it.
Yep, it's you
like
wouldn't even blink. It's
like a little snack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just for reference, the amount of omega-6s in beef is literally damn near zero. So, and that's what humans ate. They ate, not maybe specifically cows, but ruminant flesh. They ate elephants, bison, all that type of stuff. And we have podcasts on that, obviously. We have podcasts on everything at this point. But that was a human diet for millions of years. It really was. And so the body stopped converting linoleic acid to arachidonic acid when linoleic acid was above 2% of total calories. And like I said, no matter how much beef you eat, linoleic acid content will never be above that 2% marker, because grass-fed beef is about 1% linoleic acid total. Therefore, it gives our body enough linoleic acid to convert to arachidonic acid as needed, but not so much linoleic acid that it actually gets incorporated into tissues that it's not supposed to be in. It doesn't actually spill over into our cholesterol and our LDL, into our plasma membranes. It doesn't do that because there's just not enough of it. It's almost like how it's supposed to be. And
so that sounds exactly like it's supposed to be.
It almost makes too much sense, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so the sad thing is, like, people fight us on this. Yeah, go ahead.
What's up?
I was going to say, the sad thing is, like, a plant-based person or a vegan person would fight us on this, but this shit really makes sense if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, 100%, and it's just kind of like the whole evolutionary argument, the whole ancestral argument. We did eat nuts and seeds from time to time, but we were definitely not making seed oils out of them, and we were not eating nuts and seeds all day, every day, for the bulk of our diet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way we would have gotten that ratio up super high. So, like, the main problem with linoleic acid is that we convert it to arachidonic acid in our body, and once that levels get too full, then the linoleic acid just starts piling up, and then that starts spilling into our tissues, causing all sorts of trouble. Is that right?
That's right, yeah, because linoleic acid is so unstable. Our body is designed to use saturated fats and monounsaturated fat for structures because they're chemically stable. Linoleic acid is so unstable, it's like building a house out of paper mache. It makes no sense.
And the only reason we're starting to incorporate that into all our tissues and stuff is just because there's so much of it around, we need something to do with it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay.
So the final, what I want to end with is just what's like the best way? How should you increase the amount of omega-3s in your diet? So you want to increase your EPA and DHA by eating fatty fish. Salmon, sardines, oysters, all of these are great sources of preformed, bioavailable omega-3 fats. If you can't or won't eat these foods consistently, so more than once or twice a week, then supplementing with omega-3s is ideal. I personally prefer cod liver oil because it contains the preformed omega-3 fats, EPA and DHA, as well as vitamin A, D, and E, which are all low in most people's diets, and they're all healthy, so that's what I like. And I know that kind of sounds gross when I say cod liver oil, but the one I take tastes like lemon. It really doesn't taste bad, I promise. But if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to take this supplement, I recommend going to labdor.com. So that's labdor.com. And we've talked about this website in the past. They kind of rate the quality of supplements, and they do omega-3 supplements as well. So you can go and find high quality omega-3 supplements. And this really matters for fish oil pills, because these polyunsaturated fats are very unstable, like I said, and they can go rancid very easily. I mean, literally, if these things are in a clear bottle, they go rancid just by being exposed to the sun. That's how easily they get, how easily they go rancid. And there's no point in supplementing if all the oil in the pill is rancid by the time you consume it. So spend the money and get the best quality supplements out there.
I mean, if you're taking rancid fish oil, you're definitely going to be causing more harm than good. And a couple other things you should be doing with your fish oil is keep it in the fridge, keep it cooler so it won't oxidize as easy. And yeah, like Tyson said, don't buy anything in a clear bottle. I don't think most omega-3s even come in a clear bottle anymore, because I think most companies are aware of that. But yeah, make sure it's in a dark bottle and store it out away from the sun. I think the fridge is like the best spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and if you have, like, I know people buy big old omega-3 bottles or fish oil pills from like Costco, and they have them sitting in their shelf for 6 months, for a year, for 2 years. Don't take those. Throw them away. You want to get the most freshest ones you can, because omega-3 fats are actually more unstable than omega-6 fats, because they have actually one more double bond, and each double bond is a point of weakness. So it's real important with these to get high quality supplements. It's not like creatine, where, you know, it's just like a basic supplement you can pretty much get anywhere. This stuff actually does matter. Just to conclude, just a brief summary of everything I just said, omega-3 index is more accurate than simply looking at the total omega-6 or 3 ratio in our diet. Improved omega-3 index is linked to better health. Eating more fatty fish or supplementing with high-quality fish oil pills will improve your omega-3 index. And you should try and decrease linoleic acid to under 2% of total calories by following an ancestral-style diet. And yeah, you have anything else to add? I mean, we pretty much already, our diets are under 2% without really even knowing this information specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really looked at it to make sure, but I mean, just from everything I know, I'd be really surprised if it was over 2%. Yeah, I mean, that's all great advice. It seems like our advice in the past wasn't wrong or anything, but it just kind of puts it in a much more clear picture.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really, honestly, I'm proud of this, because I was able to understand this paper and I was able to bring in my own outside information and actually make it all gel. Because like I said, when I initially read this paper, it was confusing to me and I didn't agree with it. But then once I actually read through and understood and looked at the data and really, really looked at the references, it made sense. And I was like, okay, so now I know what I can recommend. And I can just honestly better help people now that I understand the omega-3 index a little bit better. And I'm really proud of this one. There's a few podcasts out there where I have like eureka moments where things kind of click, and this was one of them. And just a little backstory, this was supposed to be a simple like 5-minute article of the week. But then, Tom, you looked at the notes, and how long were the notes when you looked at it?
So generally, like our show notes are about 5 to 7 pages. For the article of the week, they're usually like 1 or 2. This one was 11 pages. So I was like, dude, this is not an article of the week. This is at least like a 2-part episode. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I know. I really did get over, and I did edit it down. I think I edited it down to 7 pages, but it was one of those things where every time I went to a new reference, I got another page of notes. I went to another reference, I got another page of notes. So it was just one of those times I went down the rabbit hole. And luckily, this was really interesting to me. I hope it's interesting to somebody else out there. And I'll link all these papers, or at least as much as I can. A lot of them I get through Sci-Hub, which I know isn't that legal. But I'll put some links on the website. And yeah, you can go down the rabbit hole too. I recommend you do. This stuff's real important for overall health. So if you care about your health, you should care about this. But yeah, that's the podcast. Hope you guys liked it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, I'm glad you fell down this rabbit hole, because, yeah, it is a lot of useful information. And I never really looked at the omega-3 index, but I can see how that's a much better marker. Because kind of like what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, like if you just simplify it to ratio, then if you cook your salmon and canola oil, well, the ratio should be fine. Mm-hmm. So that would be considered to be good. But it's like, oh, wait, hold on. You're consuming a shit ton of polyunsaturated fats, so that's probably not healthy. Or if you just ate something like coconut oil and butter and just ignored the rest of like animal fats, so you weren't really getting any omega-3s or any omega-6s, that would also be bad, even though the ratio would be fine in that scenario too. So yeah, it does make a lot of sense why just the omega-3 index is a much better marker than that ratio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, please, hopefully you guys found this useful. Please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast provider is, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.